It's got a death curse.
Don't all of you be like me. And then who will help you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wardrobe.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
Back for another Horror 101 show. Welcome to the 36th episode. Fresh off the heels of Psycho 2 from 1983. And let me tell you, this time around, we were going in this blind. Shit. Hello. I got no time for this bullshit. I'm podcasting. As I was saying, for the first time since we started this show, we got together without a plan. All I knew was that I wanted to podcast. And as luck had it, both Nick, Brian, and Nude were available that night I contacted them. So I'm like, come on over! And Nude blew my mind. It was as if she knew that I was looking for an idea. I come home from work, what's she watching? Exorcist fucking 3.
Oh, you are issuing a clear invitation to the dance.
What does that mean?
Never mind.
Blake Hellhart got wind of it. You know what he said? Not a fucking prayer. Not without him. You know who else would want in on that action? I'll give you a hint.
The man is nefarious.
So here we were, all huddled around our two Yeti Blue microphones, drinks in hand, and no clue what to cover. It was time to discuss the options.
You said Paul B's coming in August?
Yes.
Can't wait to fucking see the butter.
Monsieur Butter.
First one I wanted to propose was Waxwork. It's an Anthony Hickox movie like 1989. Anthony Hickox made an array of really entertaining films. He tackled Hellraiser with Hellraiser 3, which admittedly isn't the strongest one of the first four, but it beats anything after part 5. Warlock 2 Armageddon, which I think is much more powerful than the first Warlock. Anyway, Waxwork, he did this with Zach Galligan from Gremlins.
Okay.
You're going to say Zach Galifianakis.
It's got
Monster between two
John Rhys-Davies makes an appearance in it.
Okay.
The villain is David Warner.
That's a plus.
It's a very small budget, easy story about this guy that has collected these 18 artifacts that were owned by 18 of the most ruthless evil people in history, and he makes these waxworks of these things. And with these artifacts, they allow people to, like, if they go beyond the barrier, they're trapped in that time and space when those people were there. And if they get killed there, then they become part of the display.
Oh.
And if all 18 of them fall victim to whatever they are, then they come up and they start, they take over the earth. That's what's up. So it's another Armageddon movie.
The tag on the IMDb is, a wax museum owner uses his horror exhibits to unleash evil on the world.
No. Hold on to your sails.
Okay, Poltergeist. Classic. Might be remade very soon. But it's mainstream.
You know, Changeling's getting
like
remade.
Like
that's
you
bad
said
enough.
Last time. Everybody's seen it. It's you know, like, what can be said about Poltergeist?
It's been edited Changeling. For TV.
Yeah, but what a scary fucking movie. I mean, if you're talking about a movie that's going to scare somebody, that's one that's going to do it.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
How about if we just wait until it gets remade? And then
do both.
So something you guys are interested in when the time is right.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good.
I'm saying I'm an insect who dreamt he was a man and loved it. But now the dream is over and the insect is awake.
We're talking The Fly. It's Canadian. It's Cronenberg. Terrifying movie. And the whole tics, like the makeup did a really good job. It was all practical effects. The makeup was good, but his like tics and stutters and shit like that, I think he did a really good job.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
As the fly. So, and that scared the hell out of me when I was a kid. So that there's that one as well.
She put on that mask and scratched herself. Get it? Because of that scratch, she became a demon. An instrument of evil. Like they said in the damn movie, you heard them.
...1985 Demons. Mm. Guys, have you seen Demons? Demons is...
I know the Demons.
Well, you know what, I'm not going to share this part with you, but it was Italian, made by, I think, Umberto Lenzi.
Umberto.
Consult the Oracle on the director of Demons 1985, please. This was the one with Bobby Rhodes.
What the hell happened to Rosemary?
Lamberto Bava.
It's one of those films, like, it's got real effects, and as the movie goes on, some of the effects are cheesy, some of them are great. It's gory, it's graphic, it's once it gets going, it's never boring.
Anybody ever dubbed by a 40-year-old man?
Mm-hmm. The dubbing is one of the best parts of the movie, especially to Bobby Rhodes. He's this Italian black actor, and he plays this pimp, and he's got these two hookers with him. And the guy who dubbed him is fucking hilarious. Hilarious, man.
Right, we'll all go up there together. If we stick together, no one gets hurt. Got it?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go!
Any guesses what we finally settled on?
Beware of the blob, it creeps and leaps and glides and slides across the floor.
We talked about the remake of The Blob, which was fantastic.
I love that. It's one of the few times in which a remake manages to make real improvements on the original.
Yeah.
They took good advantage of the special effects. In a lot of ways, I would pair it with Maniac in its remake. I think they were both examples of what you should do with a remake.
Well, I mean, the original was Steve McQueen, 1958. It was very much at the time, just as that like gimmicky horror was going out,
right?
Like Attack of the like Fishmen and shit like that. Right. You know? This was like, well, look, how about The Blob? There's just this thing, this ooze that will make it roll around before the camera and make it look like it's attacking people. Yeah, let's go for it. And everybody loved it. They ate it up.
It was the time of the end of the world scenario, giant disaster threats, giant insects, hell, giant rabbits. If you've ever seen Night of the Lupin, I mean, everything was made huge. So yes, a large snot killing people. Why not? They went with it.
And it was hokey by 50 Cent standards. The same way that the 80s version was hokey by 80s standards. You know, like at some parts it winked at you a lot. You know, like some parts were truly terrifying.
Yeah.
It were like good effects, gore, like really terrifying. And then other times it's kind of like winking at you.
Oh,
like,
sure. You want to talk about hokey by 80s standards, but you won't let me. You won't accept my suggestion to do Chud.
Then The Blob it is. The Blob it is. But I'd really like to do Demons sometimes. I think you guys get a kick out of that. I think at the very least you'll be entertained, whether you like it or not. That's one thing, but you won't be bored.
You not entertained?
If
In 1958, Fairview and Tony Lynn Productions released an Irwin Yeworth Jr. film called The Blob, starring Steve McQueen. It was, at its time, an epic disaster film about a meteor landing in a small rural Pennsylvanian town. Inside the meteor is a small sentient ooze that manages to take hold of a man's hand and ends up breaking the man down entirely like an acid. And it gets bigger, and it eats more people, and it gets bigger still, and it gets redder after each victim. In no time at all, it's pandemonium as this thing threatens to consume the whole town and possibly the world. 30 years later, 1988, director Chuck Russell paid homage to that film by remaking it with a script co-written by Frank Darabont. Mr. Darabont is famous for penning some of the finest Stephen King film adaptations, including The Green Mile and Shawshank Redemption. And more recently, he's the creator of AMC's The Walking Dead. Their goal was to make a B-grade schlocky 80s version of Yeworth's original, and in our opinion, they hit it out of the park. And this film begins as the 50s version did, with the homeless old man and a meteor falling from the sky.
If something falls from the sky, don't poke at it with a stick.
I ain't going near that shit. And it was weak at the beginning. It was fairly weak.
Yeah.
I mean, in its infant...
It took forever to digest the old guy's...
Right. In its infant stage, it couldn't work. It was only when it got larger.
The one really good effect is where he actually went to try to cut his hand off. And then it covered the wound. It's like...
Yeah. Yeah, that deep gash, it starts ebbing the blood, and it's just like, nope, you're not getting out of this easily. I'm like, oh my god, you ain't getting out of this. I'd be like, go for the fucking shoulder! Go for the shoulder!
The old man stumbles onto Brian Flagg, played by Kevin Dillon. This is the first cliched character we come across, the badass delinquent type in the leather jacket. Well, Flagg tries to help the man out, but he ends up running into the street, getting hit by Meg and her boyfriend, Paul.
Paul, watch out!
This old man is not having a good day.
Flagg! Jesus Christ, what'd you do to him?
Hey, I'm not the one who bounced him off my car.
Yeah, pal. Right, you ran him in the middle of the road.
Stop it, let's get him to a doctor.
Hey, watch out, he's got some kind of corrosive shit on his hands. Come on, take it easy, mister.
If you find me on him ever in trouble, don't ever bring me to this fucking hospital, okay?
Now, how may I help you?
We've had a car accident. This guy needs to see a doctor.
He has something on his hand, too, some kind of acid or something.
Does he have Blue Cross?
I don't know.
Medical insurance of any kind?
I don't believe this shit. Look, we don't even know who the guy is.
The doctor's with another patient right now.
And this was before healthcare was wholly fucking bad in the States.
Yeah, that was a bit unbelievable. A guy comes in with an unknown contagion attached to his hand, and no one seems to give a rat's ass. Oh, you can wait for the doctor.
And then after that, the only hospital I saw emptier than that was Halloween fucking 2.
It did look like a hospital.
It was like a clinic.
It was a small clinic.
It didn't even look like a clinic. I thought it looked like the front desk at a hotel. Like at a Motel 8 or something. It's only one other patient.
That doesn't look good.
No.
And they start poking and prodding at it. Let's try and get this off.
We'll just lay on this bed and throw a blanket over you. That should cure your hand.
What is this?
That thing on his hand.
No, when they take the covers away and he's all gone from the bottom down and he's still smoking. Yeah. You know, like, what the fuck? At that point, when you first watch this movie, you don't know what's going on. You don't know what this thing's up to.
No.
But there you're like, okay, what the fuck just happened here?
It's one thing I've learned from Oh Lucky Man. You don't pull back the blanket on a gurney. You don't do that.
You don't want to know what's under
there. No, you don't. Just walk away.
And if the aftermath of the old man isn't enough for you gorehounds, then Paul is going to be nice enough to give us a full demonstration of the blob's mechanics.
Boyfriend coming apart and the arm coming off in her hand, that was solid.
And the way it pulled off like freaking taffy. That was what gave it to you.
And it was juicy too, and you heard that as it came apart, it was like, yeah.
You could see the blood was changing like consistency. It was starting to turn like gel.
Gel. It was taffy. It was pulled freaking taffy.
Yeah.
But you know what? And to have such a great effect that early in the film, you'd expect most movies to be like, well, we're going to blow our load in the first 25 minutes. What are we going to top it with? But they don't care. They just keep going. That's where it starts.
In the 50s, it was enough to simply give the audience the idea of what the blob does to its victims. 30 years later, filmmakers had the technology and the freedom to show you just how horrible a death the blob had in store for these people.
He's coming apart and he's screaming at the same time. That bothers me.
Yeah.
That, because it just, what a horrible fucking death to be consumed. You're mush and you're still alive. It's not till your brain
beats you from the outside in.
You know, it's just,
Looks like in RoboCop, right? When he realizes he's been doused in chemical waste and he knows he's dissolving.
He's melting.
Plus, he could see through it because it was kind of translucent. It was just slightly over there because he could see her and he was crying out for help and there's no help there.
Well, even then, the eyes were all fucked up and white. So I don't know if he was seeing very much.
Yeah, his face was bleaching rather quickly from the acid. You know what else makes sense about that scene, too, is that if it was later in the film, he would have enveloped him and left rather quickly.
Yes.
But it was like, as he's trying to escape it, and I think his restriction is why he's taking so long to get out, because you notice it's starting to thin. It's trying to pull away from him and exit, and it's not quite strong enough to take him with it.
Just strong enough.
Yeah, just enough, eh?
When the blob takes out a character that we actually like in front of another likable character that we've already invested in, then we're shocked. How horrible. But when the blob takes care of, shall we say, pieces of shit that no one likes, then it's a whole new, funner, more satisfying terror.
Scott Jeske is gonna die.
In this segment, we like to call the death of the sexual assaulter.
Ah!
one of the great moments for me was the date rape scene.
He's sexually assaulting this girl. Nobody likes this guy, at least shouldn't. And when he goes for a grab, he pays the price. And when it starts, like, her face comes in and all these tentacles start coming out.
And it starts
attacking him. He's screaming her name, like, what the fuck are you doing? Like she's coming alive and taking revenge on this guy for assaulting her. It was great.
That was really well done. Because they were being really quite creative. Well, we knew that it could, like... It kind of worked like a chest burster early on. Like, it would crawl inside and then it would burst its way out.
That's one of the things about this movie I can't really wrap my head around, because every other part of the movie, the thing has mass. It's large.
Yeah.
If it touches anything, it starts to break down. So it's trying to sell to me that it crawled into the car, went over his seat, and took her over without her screaming, and there was no evidence of anything burning on his
seat. She was passed out.
Okay, but he still gets it. He's not going to notice it. You know, like, how come it burns over here, but it doesn't burn over there? Of course, if I keep going, everybody's eyes are going to go across, but it was little things like that. And where did it go? Was it on the floor? Was it in her? Was it behind her? Did it come around her? I love the effect.
Say, young lady, I think that you're about ready for another one of my famous cherry coolers.
I think I've had enough.
Nonsense, you've never had enough.
The only thing it didn't have for a modern disaster film, no gratuitous nudity.
Nope.
It was going to get the rated R rating, we could have seen some breasts. And you know what, I'm speaking for Blake when I say this, because he's not here. But I think in spirit, that's what he would say.
There was not a lot of boobies. There could have been boobies, though. The girl, Vicky in the car?
Erica Liniak.
Yeah. I've seen her in Under Siege. She's got quite the pair.
Was she the one that was the Miss July?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, wow, she's hot.
Yeah.
And now it's time for the bad boy, Kevin Dillon, to team up with our lovely heroine of the film, Meg, played by Shawnee Smith. You'll probably remember her as Amanda from the Saw films. And recently, she's been with Charlie Sheen in Anger Management.
For 3 years in school, you haven't said shit to me. Now all of a sudden, what? You need my help and we're best friends, right?
You were there, you saw.
All I saw was an old man with a funky hand. That's all I saw.
The thing on that man's hand killed him, and then it killed Paul. And whatever it is, it's getting bigger.
And it's gone underground, and it's traveling through the sewers. And since Flag is a skeptical douche nozzle up until this point, we'll just have to prove Meg's sincerity by having the guy cleaning the drain in the diner therein get foobarred. Big time.
And the cook was trying to clean out plunge out the drain and where he stuck his hand in. And obviously, we've seen enough horror movies to know that nothing good can come from that.
And we all know how Brian Stewart feels about people being sucked into fucking nothing.
Yeah. That's right.
You know, so that must have tapped into his fear. You know what I liked about that scene? The fact that he's sticking his hand in. And as the viewer, you're like, oh, it's going to grab him and pull him in. And sure enough, it does, but it's not by his hands, from his fucking face. Yeah. It grabs him by his head. Yeah. And just by the time you're like, holy shit, this is a surprise. Just in time to see the back of his head just go thoom into fucking drain.
The first time, it just like compacts right in. You're like, oh, okay, well, at least he wasn't suffering as much as the others.
Yeah, he's dead now.
He had the quickest death of anybody in the whole movie.
Well, yes.
Mercifully dead.
More merciful than Fran, who gets caught in a phone booth as this blob descends on her.
Come on. Come on, answer.
Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
Yeah, being locked in the phone booth, was that a Birds reference?
You know what? I'll give that to you. I'll give this. Usually he reaches. Usually he brings something out of fucking left field, but that one I'll give you, sure. Even though people being in a phone booth or in a phone booth has been in several movies of this genre.
Sheriff Station.
Help me! Get me Herb! Get Herb Geller!
He went down to the diner.
And there he is, and you're like, oh my god, there's the sheriff!
He headed over to the diner.
And his eye's still moving in the socket. Half of his face is coming apart, and his eye is still moving in the socket. I'm like, oh my god, just die!
I think the eyes are separating too, aren't they? They're like kind of being moved apart.
Yeah, like one came out of the socket, but the other one's floating around looking at her. I'm like, please die.
Just die. Stop moving. That's horrible.
And he was supposed to pick her up for a date at that time, too. I could think it was, so you still want to go out?
Yeah.
Now here comes the U.S. Army to cordon off the town and save the day.
Our little experimental virus seems to have grown up into a plasmic life form that hunts its prey. A predator. It's fantastic.
Sir. The organism is growing at a geometric rate. By all accounts, it's at least 1,000 times its original mass.
This'll put U.S. defense years ahead of the Russians.
You don't understand. At this rate, by next week there may be no U.S.
Nonsense.
Oh my god, they built the fucking thing!
That was a kind of a cool reveal too, because at first we obviously think it's a meteor because the crash, the mangled pieces look like a chunk of rock. But when they actually hoist it up, you see that the bottom half has the U.S. flag. I'm like, oh.
Oh, they're involved.
Yeah.
They're responsible for this mess.
Da, da, da. It's like a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah,
this.
Congratulations, you made a bioweapon to be used against Russia. This blob is impervious to everything but cold. Spoiler alert, okay? Cold is the only thing that sends this fucking thing packing. Do you know how much cold there is in Russia, you idiots?
Maybe this isn't something we should deploy against Russia.
We can use it for about a week and a half.
On the southern part of it.
Yeah.
Congratulations, you've taken out Ukraine.
Yeah.
You're welcome, Ukraine.
Here's where things start getting real fun. A pivotal point in the film where the blob goes from stealthy guerrilla tactics to an all-out assault mode. It's reached a mass where it just doesn't give a fuck anymore, and like the original, the blob decides to target a packed movie theater.
My favorite part was in the movie theater. After it, like, you see the projector, like, the film melt away, and suddenly it's just, like, this pinkish-red hue. But then it goes almost like a strobe light effect.
Yeah.
And that part where they pan back on the theater, and you just see, like, the strobe effect, you see the tentacles going everywhere, and it's, like, just covering the whole back of the theater. I thought that was a really nice effect. Probably my favorite shot of the blob in the movie.
That's probably another homage moment to the stop motion kind of animation of the 50s, right? Because the flashing effect, the way it kind of, the jerky motions, I thought it was a great way to give us, again, that look, kind of a nod to its forefathers.
The one great thing about this blob film is just how smart the script is. It's more intelligent than any film of this kind should ever be. As the viewer, you are constantly set up for cliched moments where you're certain you know exactly what's going to happen. Just to have the film pull a rabbit out of its hat, it alters the schlock horror rules perfectly.
Now, at this movie, I think Darabont knows a lot of what the kind of, you know, tropes you would see in a typical disaster or monster movie, and I think he avoids a lot of them.
This movie has a whole bunch of examples where it sets you up so that the audience is like, oh, I've been through this 1,000 times, this is what's going to happen, like the guy in the diner, and sure enough, fucking pulls the rug out from under you and does something completely different. You're like, oh, that's new, that's great.
Knowing the rules ain't gonna save you on this one.
And what do we have here? Horror rule number one, never kill a child in a horror movie. Just throw that right out the window right now.
The kid eats it.
Woo!
That was the best. Child endangerment goes a long way for me in the horror films. I tell you right now, I said if a kid died, I'd give it 4 stars, and sure enough, right then and there, it didn't even wait. And, like, it knew. Like, the movie was reading my
mind. I wasn't going to say anything, because I'm like, okay, he's got to like it now, because it's coming up. I remember. I just couldn't remember which one it was.
I forgot about
purple
that.
Purple or yellow.
So it just seems like all the people that you think are key core members of the movie are the ones that are typically off limits. And don't just die. They die horribly. They die in gruesome fashion. And that's a thrill for me, because I can see 100 other movies that play by the rules. The one or two that break the rules and surprise you, that's fun.
It's a lie! All of it! He's infected. Contagious. He'll spread a plague through this place and kill all of you!
Fuck you, Dr. Meadows.
Because they give us quite a few scenes where he is just the most callous asshole you could imagine. Just absolutely no regard for humanity.
Everyone's like, expendable.
He is, you know, he is an absolute sociopath, this guy. And just doesn't give a rat's ass about anybody. I think, yeah, we wanted to see him suffer.
But when you first meet him, he's the kindly... He's like Mr. Jemima. You know what I mean?
Uncle Ben.
That's a good cut. That is so good a cut. That'll never make it in the final edit.
I'm a rice.
I'm putting it in. No. No, seriously. What did we say that was so wrong? He seemed like this good-natured scientific gentleman.
He's sweet like maple syrup.
He had big fucking smile on his face. Oh, nothing to worry about. We're looking for minerals and shit. This is all. Don't mind those people with the M16. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Everything's under control. Please get in the back of this van.
Do you suppose an army of guys in plastic suits show up every time a meteor falls? Shoot him. That's a direct order. How do you think they got here so quick? How did they even know what to come? Shoot, damn it, shoot! I'll tell you how. That meteor is man-made. It's some kind of a germ warfare test. They fucked up. Don't try it!
However, having him in the manhole and holding on by the M16 he's lodged on top of the M16, having it come up in his suit, grab him, and yank on him so hard that the gun snaps and brings him down, that was a great touch.
That's been done in horror films a lot, too.
Yeah, that was a great touch.
As far as a comeuppance goes, he didn't suffer enough for me to feel like he got what he deserved. No.
Dr. Meadows was just the hors d'oeuvre. The entire town's going to be the entree.
Oh, the colonel with the bonsai move, pulling all the pins on his fucking grenade as the thing's descending on him. Yeah, come get it, motherfucker! Comes down, squishes him, and you're like, yeah, good going, colonel. And then all you see is like this bloom, bloom, like Christmas lights going off in the light. It doesn't even move.
I hardly noticeable.
Oh, shit.
I mean, it has everything that we used to love about old kind of 50s disaster movies just stepped up a notch.
And you know what? Remember how I was talking about winks, how a movie winks at you? Near the end there where it's running amok, like it's out, everybody knows about it, it's on a free-for-all. Just the effect of it grabbing things, it was stop motion of tentacle grabbing. It looked like fucking robot chicken, it was so bad.
But I think the part where it smashed the guy on the concrete and picked it up and just flattened, you know, silly putty.
All that shit was so
like
bad.
Like Christopher Lloyd from Roger Rabbit.
Yep.
Remember me, Eddie?
I actually like that shot where it's rumbling along at the kind of bottom of the frame and it's chasing the people down the street. Remember, like the Godzilla kind of shots it's chasing the people down the street.
And it's grabbing people and you can see that like they're dummies in stop motion. I'm thinking to myself, they did that on purpose. They wanted that to look horrible. Because it was a nod to the old 50s shit. That's what they would have done 3 decades before.
The only thing this movie was missing was a Wilhelm.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was no Wilhelm.
The day is
come on! You don't understand!
This has all been prophesied.
The finale of this movie is off the wall. The blob is just this huge mass as wide as the street, pretty much acting like a huge bulldozer. Lots of gimmicky death, tons of action. It's a perfect crescendo for such a schlock film. And the premise of a predator ooze that breaks its victims down, that seemed very familiar to us.
I want to say Creep Show with the Stephen King episode.
Very much the same. Yeah, and also the raft. I thought she was talking about the raft from Creep Show 2, where it was that thing in the water that acted very much like this. It was just a mass, it was sentient, and it kind of ate you, it dissolved you and enveloped you. And even in that that skit, the thing got bigger. It was almost like it was an ode to the blob.
Yeah.
If you'll please indulge me, I'd like to get heavy here for a moment. The logistics of how the blob kills you is, for me, the stuff of nightmares.
Okay, the graphic gore of the movie was rated R. The idea behind the deaths of some of these characters that you genuinely like during this film, the idea of what they're going through is fucking X-rated shit.
Oh yeah.
If you get down to it, like these people, it's just the concept of what's happening to these people is horrifying. Like, more than anything that Jason could ever do to somebody, hacking off a head or a limb or something, breaking somebody in half, that ain't nothing compared to something eating you alive via acid. And it's showing you, like, it's showing you that these people are still alive and aware as they're coming apart in this thing.
That's right out of Aliens.
It's terrifying. This kind of violence here is more terrifying to me than most of the stuff that people would throw an X rating at all over the place, like Maniac, you name it.
Yeah. You know?
I mean, the worst death is the one where you are fully aware of how screwed you are, and there's nothing you can do.
And them taking the time to make sure that, like, the animatronics that were coming apart with, you know, eyes floating around and their mouths gaping and putting the audio in there of the muffled screams, like, this person is still alive. Watch them come apart. They're still alive. Yeah. Just die already.
This is almost a John Carpenter movie.
And that goes back to what we were saying. It's very much a thing. It's a nod to the thing. It's not the thing. Yeah. The thing is something that can become you or Nude or Nick or myself and just mimic us. If we're threatened or if we want to, we can turn into something with tentacles and come get you. We can go under doors or whatnot. But for the most part, I can mimic you. The blob can't mimic you. Nope. The blob can just consume you and get bigger. And in that way, I think the thing, if the thing would have been able to get to a populated area, I think the thing and the blob would have been very much the same thing.
Right.
Well, your meteor brought something, all right. But if it's a germ, it's the biggest son of a bitch you've ever seen.
Nude, score the fucker.
I'm going to give it a solid 7.5.
Yes?
Yep, I really enjoyed it. I was interested throughout the whole movie. Was never ever bored, and the kill scenes were all fantastic.
The men from Gladiator are showing us how to keep our leftovers fresh.
These people are here on serious business. They don't have time for your bullshit, understand?
Cult sensation.
I'm going total nostalgia on this one. I loved it when I was a kid, and I'm glad we watched it. I'm going to give this... Honestly, I'm going to give this a solid 8, because it ate everything.
Yeah, that was the main purpose, just to eat every fucking thing that moved or lived or breathed.
It's your basic slice and dice. But don't worry, there's no sex or anything bad.
Brian Stewart.
I'm going to give it a 9.
9?
A 9. There were a lot of things that kind of bother me about it, but it's too much fun. It is. And like I say, setup and payoff. There's some smart little things that get established early on that we just ignore, that when they come up again, it's nice.
It's a smarter movie than it should have been.
Yeah, probably, but...
For a movie called The Blob, you know...
That's what I'm saying. When you go to see a movie called The Blob, you don't expect these things. Good character development, setup and payoff, great death effects, practical effects, which we love, and some clever homages, like you say, the strobe effect... Kind of harkening back in that chase sequence down the street.
The hokey stop animation that they would have used a few decades earlier.
Right, done all at the right moments. And it had everything that I like. I mean, the minor things here and there, like the indifference of the hospital staff.
Cliched characters.
There's a few cliched characters, but then again, if you're going to do a monster film from the 50s, you're going to expect a few cliched characters, but it avoids all the major cliches. Mm. So it had enough of the cliched elements that you could tell where they were coming from, but they steer around enough of the major ones that there are, like, quite a few surprises and delightful ones.
The sky fell from the sky.
What's he saying?
He's in shock. Let's just go.
I would match your 9, and some of the deaths really freaked me out. Joining them in their agony as they're coming apart, and these really good practical effects... Yeah. These melting effects of these people dying this way and being absorbed and really selling it to you that it's such a fucking horrible death. I really enjoyed that. Something that they would not have been able to do in the 1958 Steve McQueen version.
Right.
But everybody ate it up in 58, just like everyone ate this one up in 88. It was a great tribute.
Wormwood falls from heaven, consuming sinner and saint alike. Who shall be lifted up to rapture? When the judgment trump blows, none but the faithful, brothers and sisters, none but the faithful.
And there you have it, my friends. The 1988 remake of The Blob, directed by Chuck Russell, starring Kevin Dillon and Shawnee Smith. Just one of the many great remakes that came out of the 80s horror period. It featured, for its time, some state-of-the-art death effects. The Blob is a film that will turn your stomach and then start winking at you, throwing in blatant corniness just to take the edge off. It breaks a lot of rules and keeps the cheap thrills to a minimum. The Blob also has some great nods to other films. Look for the blatant John Carpenter's The Thing reference in the projection room,
We had to pause the movie to make sure we weren't seeing things. We hope you had a good time listening to this 36th show. By the time you're hearing this, you can bet we've already started on the next one. For the world-famous Brian Stewart, the cult sensation Nick McPherson, and the lovely nude, this is Cash Wampum saying thanks for listening and reminding you that there's a horror movie out there that's just going to scare the hell out of you. And we're going to help you find it right here at Horror 101, Educating Your Fears.